This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
We cannot engage directly or indirectly in management of labor union.
Disappeared from sight here at the Marcus Red Fox restaurant. The FBI is up against the stone wall in their investigation.
Intensive investigation into his disappearances.
Welcome, I'm Eric Sean. You're listening to Riddle, the podcast, my companion series of the Fox Nation show Riddle, the search for James R. Hoffa. Teamsters leader Jimmy Hoffa disappeared on July 30th, 1975, and our episodes detail our Fox Nation investigation of the case. With us now, Scott Bernstein. Scott's from Detroit. He's a mob historian, author, and writes on the site gangsterreport.com. His family was in the mob in the Motor City, and he is considered the top mafia expert there. He does not believe that Frank the Irishman Sharon killed Hoffa. Sharon, the subject of the Martin Scorsese Robert De Niro film The Irishman. Sharon told me in 2001 that he shot and killed Hoffa in a house in Detroit. Authorities, though, ultimately determined that Sharon's claim was unfounded. What do you think happened?
Well, the long and the short of it, I would say that Jimmy Hoffa was picked up that afternoon on July 30, 1975, from a Bloomfield Township restaurant known as the Red Fox by members of the Detroit crime family and probably members of the Genovese crime family. I believe he was taken about a 2 to 3 minute drive north on Telegraph to a house that was owned by a Detroit mob soldier who traced his gangland bloodline to underworld royalty back on the West Coast named Carlo Licata. His father was the godfather of the Los Angeles Mafia, and he married into the Detroit crime family in the 1950s. His house was a known meeting place for sit-downs between the Giacalone brothers and Jimmy Hoffa, Giacalone brothers being the face of the Detroit Mafia for over half a century, the Detroit mob street bosses, the guys that were in charge of controlling Jimmy Hoffa, and the tandem that was, according to my research, tasked with coordinating the details of the Hoffa kidnapping and murder. I believe he was taken to that house under the sit-down that he was supposed to attend with Tony Giacalone and Tony Provenzano had been moved. I believe Billy Giacalone was probably in the car and was the lure to get Jimmy Hoffa comfortable. You know, if he saw Billy Giacalone telling him that he was taking him to a house that he had been to on previous occasions to meet with Tony Giacalone, I believe he would feel comfortable, especially since it was only about a 2-3 minute drive.
And Billy is Vito.
Vito Giacalone is also known as Billy Giacalone.
Great, great.
Billy is an Americanized version of Vito. I believe he was taken to the Licata house on Long Lake Road, which was known in Detroit mob circles as the house on the hill, because it sat kind of raised from the road, and it had a drive-in, a little garage and driveway that stood kind of hidden from the rest of the house and removed from the main road. And I believe he was taken there and killed. And then my belief is that he was then transported to Central Sanitation in Hamtramck, which was a mob-owned trash company that had an incinerator in it. I believe he was incinerated at Central Sanitation. Central Sanitation was owned by Detroit mob capos Peter Bozzi Vitale and Rafael Jimmy the Goon Quazzerano. Central Sanitation burned down in a suspicious arson fire, I believe in 1977, before the FBI could get a search warrant to go in there. And FBI surveillance units tracked Quazzerano and Vitale in the days after Hoffa disappeared to New York City, where they followed them to a meeting with Anthony Fat Tony Salerno, who at that time was the acting boss or the front boss of the Genovese crime family. I believe that was a meeting of the minds to let the New York contingent know what had happened in Detroit. That all said, in terms of where the body was disposed of, although that's my, that's the belief that I lean towards, I'm relatively confident that, that's what happened. I don't dismiss the research that Dan Waldea has put forward that possibly he was disposed of by the Genovese crime family and Ralph Brother Moscato.
Our new program, as the viewers will know, on Fox Nation and reporting on the Fox News Channel focuses on Moscato. His son, Phil, saying that his father told him where the body, that the body was brought back to New Jersey and where it was buried. He will not publicly give out the location of that. And there's also the co-owner of the dump, Frank Coppola, whose father owned the dump, saying that his father brought the body in and has detailed descriptions. Having said that, having been out and covered Frank Sherrum and having having believed that for years because of the blood pattern he found in the house, but now having new information that contradicts my reporting, which is fine, which I understand. Let's get back to one point. People would say, well, they wouldn't bring, they wouldn't drive the body from Detroit to New Jersey.
Yeah, I tend to believe that. But again, I would never dismiss any contribution to Hoffa research or the quest to finally put this mystery to bed. I would not dismiss any of information that came from that regard from Dan Waldea. He is what I call the godfather of Hoffa yes. research. It all started with him. He is the seminal researcher in this case. So if he believes it, if it comes from the fruit of his labor, I cannot dismiss it.
Is it, I guess the common sense, the Detroit view, in a way has common sense. And I've always thought you're not going to take that body. It's the hottest unknown property, a Jimmy Hoffa missing. You're not going to drive him through four states and 613 miles. But at the same time, back in that age, we have to remember there was no cell phones. It wasn't instantaneous as today. And they wouldn't have known he would be missing until 5-6 hours after he disappeared at about 3:30 or 4 o'clock. Or if not long, yeah. Certainly by the time the papers hit in the morning, it starts to get out. So potentially it could be possible, not to dismiss at all what you say. It could be possible to get him that, get him out of Detroit while everybody's looking at Detroit. But, and this is what's so fascinating about this, Scott, your a perspective and information about that meeting, and I guess which is with Fat Tony in Vesuvio Restaurant, there's no other explanation, I would think, to have them in New York reporting to the bosses.
Yeah, but I also frankly kind of take umbrage with that narrative as well. I don't think they were really reporting to the bosses as much as sitting down with their contemporaries and letting them know what happened.
Okay.
I'm a kind of offended at the notion, and I'm not saying that you're putting forth this notion, but the notion and the common narrative that Detroit was kind of this afterthought, that they're very marginalized in the whole Hoffa narrative, when in reality, Detroit was coordinating the entire conspiracy. And Detroit never answered to New York. Detroit held a seat on the commission. They were considered on equal footing with the New York Mafia. They were not. They did not defer. They did not have to ask permission to do anything. So I believe this was a Detroit job. I believe the order came from Detroit, but I believe that because of the high-profile nature of this hit, it had to be sanctioned by the commission. And in addition to the effort to get Hoffa out in the open, they had to use the Genovese and Tony Provenzano as kind of that carrot because of the longstanding beef between Provenzano and Hoffa, and Hoffa needing to get Provenzano on his side to reclaim the Teamsters in the 76 election. I believe Hoffa would have been kind of so obsessed with taking back the Teamsters, he would have been blinded by the notion that it was a setup. That he wanted to believe that he could mend fences with Provenzano, when in reality it was just a means to an end for the American Mafia to get Hoffa out in the open so he could be killed.
I apologize for being a obnoxious New Yorker, chauvinist New Yorker.
That's the narrative. It's not,
but you're right.
That's a common narrative.
Detroit would be equal, not subservient to New York, and they would treat other men of, quote, honor, unquote, as respected peers. In that way, delve into that a little bit, if you could, about the characters in Detroit.
Hoffa was a Detroiter. So, I mean, the entire Hoffa story really starts and ends in Detroit. So it's only natural that the Detroit mob would play a major role in the rise and fall of Jimmy Hoffa. Hoffa got his start in Detroit as a labor organizer on the docks of the Kroger Produce Department. He organized a famous strike in the 1930s known as the Strawberry Strike, which really put his name out on the street as a up-and-coming labor power, gravitated towards the Teamsters, got in bed with the Detroit mob pretty quickly through an introduction via a girlfriend of his by the name of Sylvia Pagano, was introduced to Detroit mafia racketeers like Francis Frankie Three Fingers Coppola, Angelo the Chairman Maley, Santo Cockeyed Sam Perone. These were three of the
They actually called him Cockeyed?
Cockeyed Sam or Sammy the Shark.
Okay.
They called him Cockeyed because he had kind of a lazy left eye.
Okay.
They called him Sammy the Shark because he was quite vicious. And these were Hoffa's entry points into the labor movement, backed by the Detroit Mafia through these three major mob racketeers. Eventually, he was put on the fast track towards leadership in the Teamsters, and he was kind of put with Tony Giacalone, who at that time was the rising star in the Detroit Mafia. He was the bodyguard and driver, protege of the legendary godfather, Joe Zirilli, who led the Detroit mob for over four decades, had a seat on the commission, was very close with all the New York bosses, as well as Tony Accardo in Chicago, Angelo Bruno in Philadelphia. And Zirilli kind of assigned Tony Giacalone to look after Hoffa, because Hoffa was the golden goose that was laying the golden eggs in respect to opening up the Teamsters pension fund for mobsters around the country to go in and get low interest to practically no interest business loans to build a lot of very profitable, a lot of profitable businesses, including pretty much the entire Las Vegas skyline. So Tony Giacalone and Jimmy Hoffa had worked very closely together for at the time of Jimmy's disappearance, it had probably been going on 30, 35 years. And Tony Giacalone was a force of nature. Now, he was, I guess the only equivalent that people outside of Detroit would have would be that he was a much smarter, sharper, savvier version of John Gotti.
Mm-hmm.
Someone that enjoyed being viewed as a scary mob figure, someone who wielded power like a blunt instrument, someone who thought very highly of himself, someone who dressed in $10,000 suits, was very fastidious, could throw you a glare that could cut ice, but was someone that was incredibly respected and feared in not just Detroit underworld circles, but nationwide underworld circles. So it only makes sense that Tony Giacalone would quarterback the Hoffa murder conspiracy, and I believe he was assigned that responsibility when the decision was made, I believe in probably the spring of 1976, to do away with Jimmy Hoffa. He had just become too much of a headache.
What do you mean by spring of 75, you mean?
Yeah, what did I say?
You said 76. I assume you mean
75. Oh, 75. I apologize.
Sure.
Yeah. Spring of 75.
Yeah.
I'm confusing it with the year I was born. I was born 13 months to the day that Hoffa disappeared in August.
Wow. And you're, with your experience and delving into this all these years, you know, what have you heard? I know those on both sides of the law trust you and rely on you as a journalist. You know, what does your gut tell you?
Well, my gut tells me in terms of why we're on this phone call or this interview right now, why there's all this buzz about Jimmy Hoffa. It's all connected to the Martin Scorsese, Robert De Niro, Al Pacino film, The Irishman. And I kind of unequivocally, people on both sides of the law that I've interviewed, and I've interviewed dozens of current and retired FBI agents that worked the Hoffa case, dating back to when it was red hot in 1975, all the way up until now, because it's an open investigation, as well as probably over a dozen made members of the Detroit mob. Not a single person gives it a shred of credibility. I've termed it historical blasphemy. I think this is just really doing a disservice to what the common and adopt the, what the accepted narrative will be going forward. I fear that in 50, 100 years from now, when kids are studying this in school, they will be referencing Frank Sheeran as the assassin in this case, when I don't believe Frank Sheeran would have. I don't even think there was the thought that bringing Frank Sheeran into this conspiracy. I don't think it was even on the table. I believe that's how far removed he was from the Hoffa kidnapping and murder. The Detroit mobsters are offended by the notion that they would have to, bring someone in to do their job. You know, I've heard a couple people tell me, you think we needed to bring some drunk Irishman in from Delaware to do our own house cleaning?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Detroit mob are masters of the underworld hit. They are experts at gangland murder. They have a PhD in how to murder and get away with it in American mob circles. We're going on, 100 years of the Detroit mob. Not one person has ever been convicted of a murder. Mm. And we're talking probably, over 100 murders in that 100 years.
Wow.
This is a group that's incredibly well-versed at homicide, how to cover up homicide, how to get away with homicide. The Giacalone brothers both died peacefully in their own bed, and they were suspects, both of them, in probably 2 to 3 dozen gangland homicides. Mm. So, these were guys that knew exactly what to do, how to do it, and how to get away with it. So the notion that they would have to bring in some carpetbagger, frankly, from Delaware to do that job is just, people think it's delusional. I mean, people around here in Detroit.
Yeah.
People in the Detroit underworld.
And other experts, I mean, a lot of other experts, too, join you in that consensus. And is there any sense of how he got into the Hoffex memo? Because if you read the Hoffex memo, it says he was in Detroit, which could make sense if he drove Russell Bufalino to the wedding. But I'm trying to figure out what else. I read one FBI report that talks about him.
I don't believe he was in Detroit on the day of the murder. I believe he was in Detroit that week, along with mob luminaries from around the country that were descending on Metro Detroit that weekend for the wedding of Bill Bufalino's daughter. So, I mean, you could probably put together a rogues gallery of two dozen prominent mob figures that were in Detroit that week. So the fact that Sheeran was in Detroit around the time that Hoffa disappeared doesn't really mean much to me because of the surrounding circumstances. But I mean, he made it into the team. He made it into the Hoffax memo because he was he was a Teamster goon that did Hoffa's bidding, or did some of Hoffa's bidding in the Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware area. He was someone that I believe was involved in labor-related murders in the past. So it doesn't necessarily shock me that he got mentioned in the Hoffax memo. But that all said, I don't believe he really had any direct knowledge or would have ever been trusted to the point where he would have a direct knowledge of something that was this high priority.
And what
Chuckie O'Brien, by the way, by the way, same thing with Chuckie O'Brien, who's gotten dragged into this kind of unwillfully Hoffa's surrogate son, who has been in the narrative painted as the driver of the car that ushered Hoffa to a slaughter. And I believe that's a total falsehood as well.
Jack Goldsmith is, we have a podcast with him and his book in Hoffa's Shadow. I recommend heartily to our listeners.
Excellent book. Excellent research.
Fantastic. Yes, absolutely. And really brings it to life and that argument about Chuckie. The movie.
Backtracking one quick second, just to let people know. Chuckie O'Brien, yes, was Hoffa's surrogate son and had kind of grown up in the Hoffa family. But by 1975, Chuckie O'Brien and Jimmy Hoffa were not on speaking terms. They'd had a very bitter falling out. So the idea that the Detroit mob, and this is again being espoused by Sheeran as well, which to me undermines his own credibility. The idea that the mob would use Chuckie O'Brien as the driver would only get Hoffa amped up and excited and mad at a time where you wanted to lower his guard and make him as calm as possible and as comfortable as possible. And furthermore, he would have never gotten into a car with Chuckie O'Brien at that point.
Yeah.
So the notion that Chuckie O'Brien helped get him into the car is ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. And to you, as someone who is so deep into this and has followed it and has such integrity, what is the tragedy, in a sense, and that may be too strong a word, but in the fact that this film is out with that type of narrative?
Tragedy is that this is really the equivalent, in a lot of ways, to a political assassination. Hoffa was a de facto head of state. I mean, outside of the president of the United States, I don't think there was a more powerful person in America at the height of his reign as Teamsters president than Jimmy Hoffa. So this would be like, you know, reading a history book talking about, you know, the Abraham Lincoln assassination or the JFK assassination and giving blatant falsehoods. So I think it's important historically to set the record straight, and I think this is now going to be kind of accepted as the gospel because it's coming from Marty Scorsese and Robert De Niro. I think that's the real shame. And some people will look at it, you know, and the title of the book that's now out, as it used to be called, I Heard You Paint Houses, they've now retitled it The Irishman to kind of piggyback off the book, but I think the subtitle is now The Case Is Now Closed on Jimmy Hoffa or something along those, and it's far from closed. So I just, it worries me and upsets me that this is now becoming the given, or the accepted universal narrative.
Yes, yes. And finally, in terms of closing the case, what will it take? What do you think? What's your sense of something finally? Because you forget that there's the Hoffa family, Barbara and James P., a real man, who have lived through this. It's been a nightmare for them. They're not happy with this film. Causes them emotional pain.
Let's give credit to James P. Hoffa
for
really righting the wrongs of his father. He went into the Teamsters Union, I believe, in 1996. He cleaned it up. The Teamsters is as clean as it's ever been right now in terms of chicanery and underworld influence. And you know, James Hoffa has done right by his family, by the Teamsters Brotherhood, and has really been a shining legacy, carrying on his father's legacy in terms of representing the working man and doing it probably in a much better way than his father did.
And do you think we'll ever? Yep, go ahead.
I tend to believe we will never have a concrete answer to what happened. I think we're kind of, the ship has already sailed. Too many people are dying off right now, or I believe there's probably only less than a handful, if that, of people that are around that have true knowledge, if not firsthand, then very solid secondhand knowledge of what happened. if I was a betting man, I would bet that we're never going to have a final conclusion. I hope we do. I hope people like myself and Dan Maldea and yourself and Jack Goldsmith, you keep pounding the pavement and keep shaking the tree. Hopefully that coconut eventually falls down, and hopefully maybe we can get some answers, but I just don't have a ton of faith in it.
Scott Bernstein, wonderful to talk to you. This will be continued because we are continuing this, folks. And, of course, you can always go see our latest reports on the Fox News Channel and on Fox Nation, Riddle, the Search for James Earl Hoffa, which is on Fox Nation now. Scott, thank you.
Thanks, Eric.
You have been listening to Riddle, the podcast. Watch our show, Riddle, the Search for James Earl Hoffa, on our streaming service, Fox Nation, and news reports on the Fox News Channel. Thank you for listening. I'm Eric Schoen.
I'm Dana Perino. This week on Perino on Politics, I'm joined by founder and executive director of Power the Future, Daniel Turner, for a look at how we can advocate for a cleaner earth while strengthening U.S. energy independence. Available now on FoxNewsPodcast.com.